recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Oh, it's live, pal.
Mattel, Jax, and other toy companies have made rings and cages for kids for years. But what if you're an adult collector that wants something that looks just like the real thing? Well, JJ at Custom Toy Rings, he's the guy that can make that happen for you. His Hell in the Cell is the best one I've ever seen built, and he's here to talk to me about it today. And that interview starts right now. JJ, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks for asking. The world's a good place. By and large, at least, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Where were you born and raised?
I'm from Oregon originally. Went to Seattle for about 15 years, got tired of the craziness, and now I'm back in Oregon.
Yeah, we're about near Portland?
Central Oregon area, in the Willamette Valley.
Oregon's got a long history. Were you into it your whole life, or when did you get into it?
You know, it's funny. No, I was total G.I. Joe, Power Rangers, Star Wars kid up until middle school. And I was actually at Toys R Us with my mom when I was in middle school. And had just gotten a 64, and there's a game sitting on the shelf. And I looked at it, and I'm like, I have to have this. And it was WWF Warzone. And my mom's like, you know nothing about wrestling. You've never watched it. I'm not buying this game for you. I'm like, nope, have to have it. This is my new thing. She's like, you don't know anything about it. So ended up getting the game and immediately fell in love. Played that game for hundreds and hundreds of hours. And shortly after I started playing, I wanted to start watching it. And actually, the very first episode of Raw I ever watched was the go-home show for Survivor Series or SummerSlam 98. And it was just, you know, Undertaker and Stone Cold in the main event and just that whole everything. I was hooked from there on out.
Oh, yeah, the Warzone. Was that the first one that you can make, like, your own stage, the create a stage function? Was it that one?
First create a wrestler. Yeah, it was an Acclaim one. It was the first one that they'd done. And then they followed it up with Attitude, like, a year and a half later. And then it transferred to THQ, and then they started doing like the No Mercy, the WrestleMania 2000. I think they did another one too. Maybe it's just those two. But it was a crappy game. It was awful. Like the entrance stage, you had to walk down steps. There wasn't a ramp. And like when you did a cage match, the ropes disappeared. Like it was. It was a mess, but it was enough.
Growing up, I know Portland obviously has had a very historical territory going back in the days, but for you growing up, was there like a hometown arena that you went to where you saw shows as a kid or as you got into it?
Basically nothing. So for growing up, the only in-person wrestling show that I ever attended was actually on the Oregon coast, and it was some real small independent. And like the big star that they had was Kurgan after he kind of left the Oddities and everything. But Oregon and Washington both have really annoying licensing and tax requirements. And so for many, many, many years, WWE did not tour the Pacific Northwest. And so the first WWE event I went to was a Raw in Seattle, right around WrestleMania 19. So that would have been like 2002, 2003. So went up there for that one. It was they had a Raw. It did really well. And then they're like, okay. Then like 6 months later, they announced WrestleMania was going to be in Seattle. And then I think I went to the Raw after that one as well. And that was when Goldberg debuted.
Oh, okay.
Wow, that's been a while. That was a big show too, wasn't it?
It was huge. It was one of the largest crowds they'd had, 67,000 fans, and it was in a baseball stadium, which was the first time they'd ever run one of those. And that was Stone Cold's retirement match too.
Okay, wow. I'm getting really bad at the memories of that stuff. So it was Stone Cold's retirement was the same night that Goldberg debuted.
Goldberg debuted on Raw the next night.
Wow. Okay. That kind of does make sense now that you're saying that, but that was totally lost on me. I'd forgotten that that's.
Yeah. It was a really great card. It was Triple H, Booker T, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels, Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, and Stone Cold and Rock in the main event.
Man, all that talent.
Yeah, it was a loaded show. Which is crazy to think, because everybody thinks about the Attitude Era of, like, you know, 97, 98, 99 as being the best. But that really extended all the way, because that WrestleMania was 2003. And at that time, they had all those Attitude stars, plus they had started adding WCW stars, plus they had Angle and Lesnar and some of those other guys.
Yeah, great point. It went up a whole nother level.
Yeah.
So you mentioned independent shows. True or false, you actually produced an independent show out there.
I did, up in Seattle. One of my childhood friends and I started an independent show promotion, and we kind of tried to pull out as many stops as we could. Very first show, you know, was a sellout. It was a small venue, but I think it was like 300 fans. But we, nice. Main event, we had Shane Strickland versus Cody Rhodes.
Okay.
That was it was pretty cool. It was a ton of work, but it was pretty fun.
You did two of those shows and then just kind of decided to go in a different direction, or
I did one. I did the first one, and then I went a different way.
Okay. Was there any other, I guess, for lack of better terms, you know, old WWF or WWE legends or guys that are on the indie circuit that showed up for that? Or was it all pretty much just up and comers?
So it was, the only former star was Cody. We also had Jeff Cobb of Lucha Underground fame.
Okay.
And Matt Cross, who I think he was also in Lucha Underground. He's done quite a few other things. Jeff Cobb was on AEW not too long ago.
Okay.
But yeah, so we had those four. We had Cody, Shane Strickland, who is now Isaiah Scott in WWE, and then, yeah, Cobb and Cross.
And that was kind of just right in that time, I think, Cody was just going nuts with independent shows and just trying to get all over the world. And he was wrestling pretty much at everybody's shows, right?
It was, yeah, as much Cody as you could want, you could find.
Yeah, I think I caught him in San Francisco at the Cow Palace.
Okay.
About that same circa, I think.
Yeah, it was crazy trying to get him because he was so busy. And it was, you know, I'm in, I'm out, I'm in, I'm out. I've got this, I've, you know. And so, like, actually right up until two days before, he called us and said, hey, I can't come. One of my Make-A-Wish kids died and I'm going to the funeral.
Oh, wow.
And we're like, yep, that's important. And he called back and said that it had been moved and he was going to be able to make it. So it was like, you know, up until the day before, we still weren't even sure if it was going to happen.
Yeah, that could be 300 people not wanting to show up. Not that the funeral shouldn't come first, but right. that could have been an iceberg in your ocean on that one.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would have been I mean, I think the fans in Seattle, they've been so wrestling starved, especially with the independent stuff, because of the laws and regulations and taxes, that they probably still would have supported it. But there definitely would have been, you know, some unhappy people, disappointed people.
Yeah. How long have you been working on these rings and cages? Some of your work's on Twitter that I've seen, but I don't know if you kind of show that off in other forms of social media. How'd you get into it and how long have you been doing it?
So, it's on, I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, same username, Custom Toy Rings. It started really, I mean, I think most kids growing up in the late 90s that had action figures, hated the crappy plastic Jax rings. I know I always did. And, you know, just slamming a figure down never made the right sound. It never had the right feel. And, I mean, I remember being, you know, middle school thinking, yeah, I could do better. And it wasn't until after I'd gotten out of high school, I'd, you know, done some college stuff. And, you know, one weekend I was bored and watching wrestling. And there was one of the little adverts for some wrestling toys and a ring. And I was like, God, they're still making those crappy plastic rings. So went over to Home Depot, bought a bunch of stuff, and started trying to put it together. That was probably, probably about 2010. And, you know, did a little bit, got sidetracked, did a little bit, got sidetracked. And it wasn't until probably 2012 or 13 that I really said, all right, I'm going to finish this, get one out. And I sat down, made a ring, sold it. And over the years, I've had to kind of refine the versions a bit, you know, do the post a different way. You know, I started out wanting it as realistic as possible. So I started with actual real rope instead of elastic rope. But trying to get real rope tight on a figure sized ring, because they don't make turnbuckles, you know, that are an inch long. That was a little difficult. So it's evolved over the years, but the first ring I sold was, I think, in 2013 or 2014.
Yeah, I saw the Nitro ring that you recently posted, which is incredible, and the six-sided ring, the TNA. Man, where was that 10 years ago? Or where was I 10 years ago, maybe? I don't know, but that thing's incredible, and the details are just incredible to me. I mean, when I think of a ring being put together at an event, that's what I'm looking at when I look at the construction earrings. It's got the wood panels underneath, just like the real rings do. And you mentioned about the sound of the ring, which takes me back to the AWA Remco ring, which, you know, a lot of people dump on because it's like a cardboard or a wood thing. But I always liked that ring because it did. It gave you that sound when you slammed a figure. It gave you the sound of a figure getting slammed in a real ring.
Yeah. I've seen that ring every once in a while. Some people have modified some of them. But yeah, like even growing up, I would try and replace the plastic flooring of my ring with a piece of cardboard, because at least it had a little bit of bounce. It made that, you know, more of a snap sound than a plastic on plastic. But yeah, the six-sided ring, that was something I just came out with about 2 years ago. You know, I had done the ring, the square ring, been selling those pretty well. Did a Hell in a Cell, sold a few of those. And, you know, one of my things is I like building rings. I like doing that, but it also gets a little repetitive, because once I figure out how to build a ring, then it's just easy going from there. And so I'm always wanting to try something new, try and solve a new problem. And so it was like, you know, build a four-sided ring, got that. Do the cage, got that. Do the six-sided, got that. And so now I'm working on an entire Nitro 2000 arena. So I'm doing that ring for the arena. I picked up some materials that I've been working on for the entrance stage. That's about half done. And then the kind of the coup de grace for that is going to be a triple cage.
Oh, okay. The Tower of Doom deal, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the cage that they built for the Ready to Rumble movie, they tied that in with the Nitro television product for quite a while. And there's just something about that era. Like, I've always been a WWE fan, but, and I might be one of the only like 10 people in the world, but I think Nitro 2000 was great. I liked Nitro in that era better than I did in 98.
Really? What did you like about it, or what separated it to you?
Yeah, it was newer, younger stars. It was better action, you know, faster pace. You know, you can only watch Hogan and Piper roll around in a ring for so long.
Yeah.
You know, in the 2000s, they really started focusing. And part of it, too, is that I'm kind of a Vince Russo guy. So, like, his storylines, his Crash TV concept, that draws me into it more than, you know, a slower-paced competitive catch-as-catch-can wrestling match. And so, you know, bringing in the new blood and the you know, the Jung Dragons and Three Count and all these younger stars that brought that, you know, kind of Americanized Lucha Libre style really, really got me.
Yeah, I wish WCW had been given a chance to kind of do that big bang or whatever the rumors were, where they were going to just kind of reboot it. I think that would have been an interesting time to have seen where that could have gone.
Yeah, it needed something. It was being crushed by, you know, Turner Corporate, and they needed to get away and do their own thing. And I was happy and excited at the same time when WWE bought it, because that brought the potential for having two separate brands and two separate shows with crossovers at, you know, the big pay-per-views. But, you know, they did that for just a few months and kind of gave up on it. And I think it could have gone a whole lot better had they really focused on making two separate shows, two separate companies, and just every once in a while, you know, had some crossover matches. Or even had it been, you know, Bischoff that had bought it with his, was it Fusion Media? And just running it separately. I think having a smaller corporate entity that's focused on wrestling would have been a lot better for the fans.
I agree. I think that's been proven by TNA and even AEW, just not a division of some huge corporate conglomerate, but an actual wrestling company. I mean, I guess, you know, they are owned by somebody bigger. Maybe we'll scratch that whole idea, but it seems like they are, for whatever reason, it doesn't seem like such an afterthought as WCW did.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I've been listening to Bischoff's podcast for the last few years, and I mean, he just keeps going back to that, as you know, it was a media company that owned a wrestling company, as opposed to a wrestling company that made wrestling shows. And when new executives came in and said, yeah, we're not really interested in wrestling, that was it. You know, they.
So you've said you were kind of a Russo guy and you listened to Bischoff's podcast. Suffice to say, those guys aren't very big fans of each other. Where do you kind of sit on that whole feud that goes on between them? And I guess you could even throw Cornette into the mix too. It seems like a triangle of guys that don't care too much for each other.
You know, I think that when you have these creative types that have their vision and their ideas, and each of them has their own idea of how it should look and work, there's going to be issues. I think Vince Russo was, I don't want to say visionary or revolutionary, but he had a new vision, a different way of doing things. You know, he didn't want to produce a wrestling show. He wanted to produce a drama, a Crash TV type show. And it obviously it worked. I mean, they went from, you know, 1.5 million viewers a week up to, you know, 6, 7, 8 million viewers. You know, some of the highest rated television segments in the history of wrestling were Vince Russo things. You know, the Rock and Mick Foley, This Is Your Life, that was a Russo thing. You know, there's a lot of things that, you know, he always gets a bad rap for ruining the business, and but he changed the fundamentals. It was moving away from the childish, cartoonish, put a match in the ring, into more storyline driven. I think Bischoff has a valid point too, that you have to be able to have a creative vision and a complete thought out story arc. You know, a lot of the problems with WWE programming during that time was, you know, we do this thing and then we do this thing and then we do this thing, and they're all great, but they don't really tie in together. There's no overarching story. And Cornette's thing of, you know, wanting traditional wrestling to focus on the wrestling, that's fine too, but I also think that that's kind of going away. Like, the average fan nowadays, you know, if you look at ratings for AEW, it's a wrestling product, and the ratings have about, you know, 1 million viewers a week, whereas when it was during the Attitude Era, it was a entertainment property that had wrestling involved, and that's when it was at the height of its business.
Yeah, well said, man. I was going to transition back over to your cages and your rings and ask you, I didn't really get a chance to get to your Hell in the Cell, but that looks about 18 to 20 times better than the Mattel release. obviously way better constructed, yeah. But I mean, just even from a visual, was that just somebody asked you to build one, or how did you get into putting that together?
That was one of my board Saturday weekend things. You know, I'd been doing the rings, didn't have any orders I was working on, and I said, all right, what else can I do? And it was about the time of the Hell in the Cell pay-per-view that I started working on it. And again, I just, you know, went over to Home Depot, bought a bunch of material, spent hours looking through, trying to find the right stuff to use for meshing, trying to find out ways to get these panels to attach to each other. And yeah, the cell is probably one of the favorite things I've made because it looks so realistic and it functions so realistically. But it is incredibly expensive. You know, one of the advantages that Mattel or Jack Specific or these other companies have is plastic is a really great material. You can make it look and act like anything you want. But for the most part, you can't do that at home. You know, you can get a 3D printer and kind of maybe get a few pieces, but you know, the injection molding process is, I mean, that's why it's been around for so long and isn't going anywhere, is because it's so versatile. But yeah, so like just material cost, you know, if I go to Home Depot with a shopping list to build a cell, I'm at about $200 just for the materials. If that was made out of plastic, it would be, I mean, $20 maybe worth of plastic.
Yeah, I guess it depends if it's plastic here in the States or plastic over in the Mattel factory in China, right? Right.
But the big thing for me is I never want to build a cheap toy. If you want a plastic ring or a plastic cage, there's people that make those. And, you know, if that's what you want and that's what you can afford and are happy with, that's fine by me. I'm not trying to make a toy for children across the world. I'm trying to make high-end, high-quality, you know, with thought given into detail, uncompromised. I mean, that's what, one of the big things with Mattel stuff is they compromise constantly. I remember watching an interview with, I can't remember his name, but he's the lead designer for Mattel for WWE toys. And they had just released or announced the release of the first Ronda Rousey action figure. And somebody asked him, you just took a female torso and painted a t-shirt on it, and you can still see the belly button on the figure. And this lead designer goes, yep, yeah, we didn't have the money to spend on retooling to make a proper torso. And those are the kind of compromises that I don't want to do. I don't want to make a toy just for the sake of making a toy. I want to make something that you want to have, that you'll, you know, appreciate, that you're going to spend your hard-earned money buying, because these things aren't cheap. You know, I mean, I build them by hand with out of metal. You know, so if you get one of my cages or rings, it's going to be a lifetime product. It's not going to break because it's made out of plastic, and it's going to be as realistic as I can make it. I'm not going to compromise on parts and quality and, you know, just try and sell a product.
Yeah, the thing looks super sturdy and probably would even support Mick Foley getting slammed on top of it without collapsing, I would imagine.
Shipping weight on that thing is 17 pounds.
Oh, wow. So does it ship like in whatever that I'm not really good at math, obviously, but yeah. 4 or 5 panels that are broken down flat and then you can, you know, clip them together or hook them together when they arrive? Or how does that?
Yeah, ship? So it breaks down into 12 separate panels. There's 4 panels that make up the top, and then each side is 2 panels.
Okay.
So there is, you know, assembly involved. You do need, you know, a screwdriver, and it's kind of a simple idea of how to attach 2 pieces with nuts and bolts. I mean, it comes with instructions, and it's very, very straightforward. But yeah, it assembles like the real cage. You know, the cage that WWE uses, they ship that around the country in panels, and then they attach the panels together, and that's exactly how you build this cage.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. By, like I said earlier, by looking at your rings, that's the rings are look to be assembled and built just like the real ring. So no shock that the Hell in the Cell would be done the same way coming from you. It's top of the line quality stuff. And if you guys haven't seen these Hell in the Cells or the rings, I can't recommend enough to hop on social media and check out Custom Toy Rings, because they are some of the best products I've seen built.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely, man. Is there any figures that are revered, you know, more than others by you, as far as some people say, you know, a Rushmore, or if your house was burning down, what would you grab on your way out? Do you have any figures that mean more to you than any of the others?
I have actually a box. It's in my room right now, of like kind of my favorite figures. I don't get them out very often. I really don't play with them much anymore. Every once in a while, I'll get some pictures. But it's of course the stuff from my childhood. You know, when I think back about what got me into wrestling and how happy I was during that time. And so this box has, you know, Stone Colds, Undertakers, Canes, Rocks. But actually during that time, I think Toy Biz, who did the WCW figures, were killing it. Those figures, the detail that they put into them was three times as good as what Jax was doing. And so that same box has Booker T, it has Sting, Kevin Nash, Giant, Hogan, you know, the whole line of that Toy Biz during that era. I think those were great figures, and they came with great accessories. You know, the Sting I have has a leather coat, and it's actually good quality fabric material. It's hand sewn. They really spend a lot of time and energy on those. And those would be, I'd be pretty upset if I lost those.
Are you still collecting today, or are you kind of just more into building and departed from collecting figures?
Yeah. I've got a few toys, some of the new stuff. You know, I've got, in the last 3 or 4 years, I haven't really gone on much of a spree for collecting. Part of the problem too is Mattel just puts out so much stuff. You know, you'd spend easily $500 a year on just figures. And, you know, my focus at this stage of my life isn't to collect action figures. You know, so if I see something that's really cool and I think, oh man, you know, I need that Cactus Jack so I can take a better picture for this cage that I'm working on, sure, I'll pick that up. But for the most part, I'm at this point not into going out and getting every new item.
Makes sense. Yeah. So you're almost getting figures as an accessory for lack of better words, like a commercial for your cages and rings. If you see something that'll look good and, you know, help you get your ring or your cage over, you'll grab that figure.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually there was I had been making cages and rings and stuff for a little while, and I'd really liked, there was a couple Jax figures that I had from the Ruthless Aggression, or no, what were they called? Deluxe Aggression. I liked the figures, the way they posed, the scale of them, and I'd been using them pretty exclusively for pictures, and a couple people on YouTube were like, are these the only figures this guy has? So I was like, all right, I'll pick up a couple new things.
Are there any figures out there that you wish Mattel would make, or have they kind of covered the gamut of where your interests lie?
I would, again, really like to see some classic WCW items that they don't really focus on very much. And I know they've done a Wolfpack Sting and a Scott Hall and a bunch of those figures, but I think that period of time had the most fans, and they aren't producing, in my opinion, enough figures from that time period. And if you looked at the release schedule for this year, you know, they're doing, you know, Stunning Steve Austin, and they're doing, you know, some of the early 90s, but not a lot is focused on the late 90s, that early 2000. You know, I don't think I've ever seen, at least the WCW version, of, you know, some of those guys I mentioned earlier. You know, the Mark Jindrak, Sean Stasiak, Chuck Palumbo, Sean O'Hare, Three Count. You know, I don't know how much of a market there is for that. I'm sure Mattel has spent thousands and millions of dollars figuring out what fans want. But I think for me, if they started making some more of those classic early 2000s, really late 90s, on both sides, WWF and WCW, that'd be interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think, well, I don't know how much research or how far the research goes. I should say, I don't know how much water the research carries, because I would have thought like the Bobby Heenan and the Weasel suit would have been sold out everywhere and hard to find. I ran out and grabbed one, and for now my collection,
pig warmer.
Yeah, there's eight of those in every Target I go to. Some stores don't have any other figures other than that one. So
yeah,
I don't know how they determine that stuff.
Well, and I wonder too if they're clearly not making the same quantity of each figure, because I really wanted the Survivor Series Kane that they just came out with a few months ago, and I could not find that anywhere. So I don't know. I mean, they're making, you know, 1,000 Roman Reigns and 1,000 AJ Styles and all those other ones. But it seems like when they do a retro figure, they make such limited quantities of them, or they completely overproduce them.
Yeah, that's a good point. It seems like they don't sometimes have a good pulse of that as far as how many should be in each case, maybe.
Yeah. You know, and toy companies are doing this lately too. You know, the G.I. Joe Hasbro just started that 6-inch figure series, and I mean, completely sold out everywhere you look. I mean, there was a huge mess with even the release date of them. You know, they were doing pre-orders online, and then it was, well, no, everybody gets it the same day. And then some Targets were putting them out early, and there's not enough of them being made. And I think that's on purpose to create buzz and demand. But at the same time, it's frustrating to a collector or to even an average fan that wants, you know, I don't want every single figure, but there's a couple out there that I want, and it'd be nice if I could just go buy them.
Yeah, if I could find anything, it would be great. Yeah. JJ, I know we're just about out of time, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to be with me today. I admire anyone who makes things to support wrestling figures, and with that being said, your rings and cages are right at the top of the list as far as I'm concerned. I'm really looking forward to what you have in store for the wrestling figure community in the future, and I want to thank you for coming on. Is there anything you're working on that you want to plug, or where can people find you on social media, all that good stuff?
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time as well. YouTube, Twitter, eBay, and Instagram, it's Custom Toy Rings. If you want to email me, that's customtoyrings@outlook.com. Please be patient. I have, like right now, I have 3 rings that I have open orders on that I'm trying to build. So building a product for somebody that's made a purchase always takes precedent over responding to questions on social media. So if I don't get to you for a week, please don't think I'm ignoring you. I'm just trying to focus on somebody that's waiting on a ring that's already paid. But please ask any questions that you want. I'm happy to chat. You know, I've even had people want to know exactly how I build a ring because they want to go try and build it themselves. That's fine by me too. You know, I'm not here trying to, you know, make this a business and my full-time job. You know, if you have the skills and the know-how and want to build something yourself, I'm happy to run things by you, or you run things by me. And I'm always happy to see when somebody takes one of my designs, improves on it, builds their own, comes up with something that that's going to make them happy. So I'm here. I'm accessible. If you have any questions, I'm around. As far as future projects, trying to get that WCW arena done. It's going to have the a full entrance set with a working projector, Tron, LED lights, the triple cage. It's going to be, I hope, pretty epic.
Yeah, man, I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that. And I don't know if you'll be able to work it in, but that the broadcast booth would be an awesome addition to that. If I don't know if that's in your plans or not, but I always thought that was pretty iconic as well.
Yeah, that is a really cool way that they did that. For this specific era, though, they had moved it to ringside. So it is going to have a realistic announce table at ringside. But I've also been looking at doing a 98, a 97 Nitro too, with the classic, you know, 3 arch truss system and all that stuff that had that separate broadcast position. So yeah, I'm always looking to do new things. If there's suggestions out there, happy to do it. And, you know, custom products too. You know, I've had people request custom entrance stages, custom cages that I've built. So just because you don't see it advertised or listed or posted doesn't mean I'm not interested. So if there's something that you just have to have and want to know if I can do it, ask me.
Yeah, man. Ed, you've also got some awesome breakaway tables for up on eBay. People should check those out. One of the time-honored traditions that I'm putting into this podcast is on our way out here, I want you to pick a wrestling theme, and we'll head out on that.
What would be my outro? Let's go with my favorite wrestler as a kid growing up, Road Dogg. So if you can play some you didn't know, that would I think that'd be fitting.
You got it, man. Road Dogg it is. Thanks again for joining me, JJ, and we'll be looking forward to seeing your work coming out soon.
All right, thanks, Tim. Appreciate it.
Take care.
All right, bye.
Your ass better call somebody.
Guys, I went a little long last week, so I want to keep this at a minimum, but I want to give some special thanks and shout outs. First off, I'd like to say thank you to JJ for stopping in and talking to me. His cages are amazing, and I plan on getting one, and I hope you guys consider getting one yourself. If you are in the market, a real scale one can cost you a couple $100, and this is to the next level, so support JJ and people like him that are making cool stuff for us. Shout out, JJ. Thank you. I'd like to give a shout out to Drew Venzel and his wife, Caitlin, and encourage you guys to check out their podcast, Tales from the Estate. It's one of my favorites, and I think you'll dig it too. Check them out. Shout out, Drew and Caitlin. Shout out to Jeff and Scott over at Fully Posable Wrestling Figure Podcast. This week was my buddy Scott's birthday. I want to say happy birthday to Scott. Check out their podcast. Support them. Buy a shirt. Shout out Scott and Jeff. Happy birthday, Scott. And speaking of Scott, check out Drunk Wrestling History. One of the coolest podcasts you're going to hear from some real fans that know the ins and outs. Think opposite of Dave Meltzer. Shout out Drunk Wrestling History. Check out Breaker and Bane's Power Hour. These two guys have been doing it a long time, and their chemistry is second to none. I enjoy their show each and every week, and you should too. Check them out. And speaking of Breaker, check out his other podcast. You know it's fake, right? Love the peek behind the scene and all the guests that he has from all different angles. Shout out Breaker. Thank you for listening to Pulling Up a Chair with a Chair Shot. If you enjoyed it, please help put the show over by telling a friend and clicking the subscribe button on Anchor, Google, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. You will get instant notifications whenever a new show drops. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at a Chair Shot. That's A-C-H-A-I-R. S-H-O-T. You will want to keep an eye on my socials in the coming weeks. Trust me. Feel free to leave questions or audio comments on the show page on Anchor FM's website or email them to me directly at hairshot@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in again. And until next week, Bobby.
All good things must come to an end, right?
Well, every time changes
everything.
And
a friend in need is a pest.